If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Good morning, it's John Williams. You heard me chatting with Bob Sherrod a moment ago. First time he and I have done what we call, I think, crosstalk here. I was away yesterday. John Hansen filled in for me. And thank you, John, for that. And congratulations and Godspeed there, Mr. Sherrod, as he steers us forward in the choppy waters of broadcasting in Chicagoland. By the way, I was off yesterday because Brenda and I went over to Northwest Indiana, Southwest Michigan. We go to New Buffalo once in a while. Brenda's over there right now taking a little getaway. She's got some space. I've got some space. It's kind of a thing we do in January sometimes, just to sort of give ourselves a little breathing room.
The whole month?
It's kind of fluid.
Wow.
By the way, things are fine.
Okay.
I said to Brenda yesterday because we kind of went over and moved her into an Airbnb that she likes to stay in. Friends of ours have it, and so it works out well for everybody. But I said, what's the thing you like the best about getting away from me in the condo in Chicago? And she said, just like, I don't have to worry about what you're doing or anybody else is doing. I just do my thing. And I said, I kind of feel the same way. When you leave, I can do whatever I want, wherever I... We get along great, and there's just the two of us these days. The kids have left the coop, but it's very relaxing, I think, for her, and it's kind of relaxing for me, too.
Has she ever considered going, like, somewhere warmer? Because it is January, and New Buffalo's beautiful, but, I mean, come on, it's January.
Well, it's right there, so I can buzz over on the weekend, she can buzz back if something's going on here, so...
Great shopping.
I'll tell you what, when you make the corner on the lake, and the city is in the distance, and there's just trees, and the lake is right there, and you don't even see it when you're driving along the Skyway or whatever. You do on the Skyway, but, you know, most of the way, but you just kind of know it's there. You sort of feel the tension of the city dissipating as you drive along.
Did she take the dogs?
She did take Daisy, the Dizzy Dapple Dachshund, which works out great for me.
Because Daisy hates you.
Daisy does not like me, Steve. You're right. She's never got along with me. I don't know exactly what the deal is, but she's better. But when I come into the room, she growls, and she's still a little fight or flight when I'm around. She's very conscious of where I am. We've had this dog for, I don't know, 8-10 years. Rescue dog. Somebody messed her up, and now we're still trying to rescue her. By the way, today is also noteworthy, to me anyway, because starting yesterday, and then today, and moving forward, we pick up an extra minute of daylight every single day. An extra minute now. And then tomorrow, more than a minute. And the next day, a little bit more than that. Producer Elif, how much daylight do we have today, please?
9 hours and 17 minutes, John.
All right. So then tomorrow, anyone? Tomorrow will be
9 hours and 18 minutes.
Attaboy, Dave. Good job. Good job. Steve, and then what will it be after that? 9 hours and
19 minutes.
19 minutes. Yeah. Good job. Good job.
Does this mean it's sunny? It's sunnier earlier?
It's about a half minute on either side.
Oh, it divides evenly.
Kind of. Yeah. I was looking at the clock on that, and I didn't break it down that specifically. But I do know that January 6th is the turning point for if you want a minute of daylight extra every day.
It needs to get lighter earlier. It's just, why?
Heck, at this rate, it's going to be light until 7 o'clock at night.
Well, that will happen. Okay. Now, remember, in the summer, it's like 9:30. By the way, it's a funny thing, though, Mary. You were complaining about it needs to get light earlier. It's so interesting when you're in Northwest Indiana or Southwest Michigan, and many of you are listening to us there, since it's an hour later, it does feel to them like the sun comes up later, but they get an extra hour of daylight on the back end. We're all living with about the same amount of light per day, but where here it gets dark around 4:30, 4:45 now, there it's 5:30, 5:45. So I don't know what that's like for those people listening to us in the Eastern time zone right now. But it would seem to me like if you're a person who wants the daylight on the back half of the day, Mary wants it on the front, it must be very pleasant.
Yeah, they just sleep in every day.
It would probably make it harder to get up and
yeah,
get going.
For sure.
Some other factoids in the news. Pot sales, you heard, in Chicago in 5 days and in the state of Illinois. 5 days, almost $11 million. Good job, everybody. Good job. A lot of taxes paid that way. The numbers in Iraq, 40 people killed in that stampede at the General Soleimani funeral. 213 injured. Those are the latest numbers. The news on that in 10 minutes. And here's something else that people are going to be talking about after tonight and through this week. Jeopardy is having not a tournament of champions. They've been having those for years. They're having the greatest of all time tournament. The greatest of all time tournament will feature Ken Jennings, who holds the show's record for consecutive games won, 74. He made $3.4 million on Jeopardy. Brad Rutter, who is the show's all-time greatest winner with $4.7 million in earnings. And he did that in 2000. Back then, you could only win five shows in a row. Then you were crowned the week's champ, but you didn't come back the next week. But they had a bunch of tournament of champions, and he would keep coming back and winning those. So even though he was capped at five on his initial run, he has, in fact, won $4.7 million and is the all-time winner. How about that? He may be a little bit of a dark horse. And then James Holzhauer from Naperville, during his exciting 32-game run last year, Holzhauer piled up more winnings than any contestant in the show's history. Not only did he set the show's single-game earnings record, in one episode he made $131,000. He holds the top 10 single-game totals. Remember, he would go right to the expensive answers right away. He wouldn't pussyfoot around with 200, 400, 600. He went right to $1,000. Holzhauer's total Jeopardy winnings are 2.7. So these are the five or the three greatest. The episodes are going to be each 1 hour long. So they'll put the three champions on tonight, tomorrow night, and the next night. They will go 2 half-hour shows. At the end of those, say, 2 half-hour shows tonight, whoever has the most money wins. You're the round one champ. And they're going to see who can win after three rounds, whoever has the most wins. If each of them has a win, then they'll do another show. Or they'll do multiple extra episodes if they need them. At least that's my understanding on how this episode thing works. So that's James Holzhauer. His brother, Ian, has joined us in the past, and he's on the phone right now. Hi, Ian. It's John Williams. You're back on WGN. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again.
That's about how it works, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's basically a best of seven. The first player to win three nights will be crowned the greatest of all time.
Okay, so you don't need to win two. You need to win three. So if somebody sweeps it, then they're done.
That would be pretty amazing.
You'd need four.
You would need four.
But just show how bad I'd be on this.
You're not winning.
Nine. So, are those happening live tonight, or have these already been recorded like the other Jeopardy episodes?
They are pre-recorded, but the contestants are under, you know, heavy non-disclosure agreements. I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yes, I'm you do. Excited. Tell me what happened. Who won?
Well, I think the winner doesn't get his money if he spills. So I would think whoever won was especially quiet about it.
Do you know when did they record these?
Yeah, I think it was around November, maybe early December or something like that.
How
they
about
recorded.
That? That's just amazing to me. It's amazing to me on the long runs that these guys have had, and now the greatest of all time. You know, there's a studio audience. There's Alex Trebek. There's Tex on the show. We don't know who wins. That's amazing to me in this day and age.
Yeah, in today's world, sure is.
So, Ian Holzhauer, you are an attorney, correct?
That is right.
They list your brother as a professional sports gambler. Is he still a sports gamer?
Yeah, he is. Of course, the last year, he's gotten a little distracted, right? So he had to be on Jeopardy for 30-some days. He did the Tournament of Champions. And then this greatest of all time. And by the way, in real time, this has all been under a year that we've gotten from point A to point B.
Oh, really? So, wow.
Yep.
Wow.
So all of that has, been a major, distraction from his normal activities.
Well, when he's doing his normal activities, that is his job of betting on sports legally, does he go to a casino to do that, or does he just do that online at home? How do you do that?
Right. So you have to be in a state where sports gambling is legal, and there's only a couple. You can bet online if you're in the state of Nevada, so he does that. But then I think he has to pick up his winnings at casinos. but they all know who he is. They knew, actually, they knew about him before Jeopardy, but now especially he's made a name for himself.
Dave, he could come home and do that, couldn't he?
So I don't think you can do online sports gaming in Illinois.
Indiana?
That could be right, yeah.
Now, there was some talk about him going to work for the Cubs. Did anything ever come of that?
So I think he had some talks with them and some other teams. So I think anything like that could be a possibility in the future.
I'm sorry, what would he do for the Cubs?
Well,
that
you
was
know,
before they hired David Ross as manager.
any other team, I think, apply some of that statistical analysis
really?
Skill.
Wow.
I mean, part of why he's so successful at sports betting is he's able to scout prospects and sort of figure out who's going to be good, who's underrated.
Well, is he as good at sports betting as he is at Jeopardy?
I think so. I think he's pretty good. I mean, he's been banned by about half the casinos in Vegas, so...
Not for anything unethical, just he's just too good, huh?
Right, for winning so much. So
he's not playing cards, is he? He's just sports betting?
Nope, he just sports bets.
So who does he like in the Super Bowl?
I think at the beginning of the season, he actually liked the Patriots, so that didn't turn out well.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, so hopefully the greatest of all time goes better than that.
So he's made millions of dollars. He's also, I understand, given away many thousands of that to charity. What was Christmas like for you guys? Was it like, here comes Uncle James!
Santa Claus is here! So actually, the biggest problem that came along with that is, what do you get a guy for Christmas who's just won that much money on Jeopardy?
$3 million, yeah.
I'm actually pretty proud of myself, because what I did here is I commissioned a professional singer, songwriter, to do a song about him. It's called Jeopardy James. Everyone knows his name. And it was about his winnings on Jeopardy, and I gave it to him for Christmas, and he enjoyed it so much he put it up on Twitter. So it's up on his Twitter feed, posted on Christmas Day. I thought that was a pretty good gift, something most people don't have a song about them.
Have you heard this song?
No.
Pardon?
I'm looking at my colleagues here. Well, I'm going to ask my producer to pull it up. So if we follow James Holzhauer on Twitter, I can find that song.
Yep. It'll be on December 25th. Yep.
And is this lyrics by Ian?
No. It's kind of a weird but interesting tangent. There's a guy that you can email if you'd like to have a song, and you just give him a few ideas, and he puts them together in a quick song. So my brother-in-law is actually in radio himself, and he heard about this guy and passed the name on to me, and that's how I figured it out.
So what's been the strangest thing about this year-long run then for you guys?
That's a hard question to answer. My daughter is 4, and she was at preschool, and they have a TV out in the lobby, and there's a story about my brother, and she's like pointing up at the TV and saying, "That's Uncle Jamie." and to have your 4-year-old be able to kind of walk around in public and be able to spot her uncle in random places is a bizarre feeling. When I visited him in Las Vegas earlier this year, he was getting recognized kind of everywhere we went. So that was also unusual. Just
how much
kinda...
fun for you guys. Well, so do you have any, I've just got a minute left here, but do you have any sense of his chances? I mean, I'm not asking you to cheat or
I can't tell you, John.
Well, no, these are alternative facts, Dave. This is a new question. Listen carefully. Knowing your brother, we all know Ken Jennings. Maybe we were paying attention in 2000 to this Rudder guy. But
sure.
Do you have a sense of how your brother will stack up against the other two?
I think they've all been preparing for the last, well, their whole lives, but especially the last few months, knowing this would come up. They're all incredibly quick on the buzzer. I think he's got youth on his side. And I think he's just determined to win this. So the intangibles, I think, go to him. It's a tough contest, but, I'm thinking he'll come out on top.
He's at least the most recent clicker. I mean, it would seem to me like if it's think and act, because you told us that it's the physical as much as the mental. You need to know the answer and anticipate when to hit the buzzer ahead of other guys that do the very same thing. So maybe he's just in a more of a groove than they are, right?
And he's younger, which helps.
I suppose that's true. By the way, we did find your song.
Yep.
This is it, right?
He knows everything about baseball, that's the truth. Everything about it except for Babe Ruth. He got that one wrong on Jeopardy, but hey, even he can't play it perfectly. He still managed to impress Alex Trebek 32 times before he left. Oh, whoa, that was quite a run. That resulted in 2.7 million.
Well done, well done. There's more to it. I'll play it later on. It's clean, right? We can.
Yeah, it's clean.
No curse words.
Correct.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Ian. You're a nice representative of your family and your brother, and I hope we can visit again, maybe after your brother has a successful run here. Have we talked to him? I know he's been in media, but he's kind of been shy about coming on radio and TV shows. Does he come on our show?
He's pretty good about email responses, but that's about it. He's pretty tied up right now.
All right, I'm going to call you again then. My best to your family, Ian. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, and good luck to James tonight.
Yeah, his brother James is on that greatest of all time tournament there in Naperville. How about that?
Steve's going to give the hint. I think we're going to have the same one.
It's named after a cat?
Yeah, that hates Mondays.
A cat. Garfield.
Yeah! And then it's Garfield Park Conservatory. Dave, give yourself a ding.
Okay, ding.
For two. Thank you, John Hansen, for filling in for me yesterday and doing our Monday quiz. Not exactly the greatest of all time Jeopardy championship there, but, you know, we do the best we can. It'd be nice if Trebek would go, Garfield, yes, okay, you get $1 million.
I love the street cafe, I'm on a street team. I love Meryl Streep in the flick, One True Thing. I love traffic, I love the colors, yellow and green. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
Speaking of talking about Jeopardy, I forgot that your daughter was on Jeopardy too, correct?
She was. My daughter Lindsay was on several years ago in the college tournament.
Yeah.
And it was great. I mean, we went out there, and what Ian was saying about the non-disclosure agreement, I mean, they really drill that into, they put the fear god in you.
So you knew how your daughter did.
We knew, but we could not tell anybody.
Even in the audience. I mean, of course you can.
I couldn't tell family. I mean, it was my wife and my son, the three of us were there cheering Lindsay on, and we could not tell a soul what happened. And we were just petrified that if somehow the word got out, that we would cost her this great opportunity.
Yeah, right.
She'd have to forfeit whatever she won.
What did she win?
She won like $10,000.
Why $10,000?
Yeah, it paid for grad school.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So for one afternoon on a silly TV show, grad school is paid for. Wow. Or a big chunk of it.
A chunk of it, yeah. It was a fun experience. I mean, really, it was
I would have been just a nerd. I was nervous watching my sons play baseball. You know, Little League.
Yeah, me too. It was a lot like that.
Yeah.
But except that unlike those Little League games where the parents are all, come on, Griff, come on. The studio audience has to be dead silent. You can't whisper. You can't say anything. You can't cough because they're afraid people will cough in code. You know,
really?
I mean, they coach you up. They tell you you can't do this. You can't just nothing. Can't rustle papers. Anything.
Are you that good? You're a smart guy. Could you do well on Jeopardy?
No. No. You know, and a lot of it, and this is the truth, they have them practice, and this is, you know, they give them tips, and they tell them practice with a ballpoint pen.
Oh,
and
yeah, right.
Just clicking,
sure. Yeah.
Clicking, and because half of it isn't knowing the answer, half of it's being the first to click.
Well, get a load of this. I'm going to play for you when Ken Jennings was on. Okay, so he's one of the three. Not our James Holzhauer, but Ken Jennings, who is the guy that wrote the books and really became the face of this celebrity of the Jeopardy champion. Because there's three things that happen, it seems to me. One is you got to understand what the heck they're talking about, because it's in a reverse order, right? They give you the answer, you got to then phrase it in a question and figure out what they even asked. Then two, you got to be quick with the click. And then sometimes there's a little twist, like, well, listen to this. This is Ken Jennings. This is when he was on his run, or he made his millions. Listen to this will be Jeopardy 1, Elif. This is, listen to the category that Trebek is about to describe.
Initials to Roman numerals to numbers will give you a clue that will lead you to a person's name. You take that person's initials, it translates into Roman numerals, then you translate that into regular numbers. Sounds complicated, but you'll get it very easily. For the TV late night host who in April 2014 announced he'd be retiring.
Okay, so how are we doing, everybody?
Well, DNL, but I'm trying
to
think.
That's good. So now you need to know David Letterman.
Right.
The guy that said
David Letterman, but it's.
So then that's DL. Now DL in Roman numerals.
L is 50, right?
So you're getting, so now.
Well, what's D?
I think it's 500. So it'd be 450 or 550. Here's the answer.
Ken?
What is 550?
That's it, David Letterman.
Okay.
We could totally do it, John.
If the two of us were allowed to have about 5 minutes, we could get some of these. Okay, let's try the next one then. This is question number two.
Numerals for 800.
For the naturalist who discussed his theory of evolution in the expression of the emotions in man and animals.
What? Okay, so somebody said something. Now we need to know who that is. Then we need to know what his initials are. Then we need to translate that into Roman numerals and then numbers.
CD?
Meaning Clarence Darrow or Charles Darwin?
Darwin.
Well, here's the answer. What is the answer? I'll play it.
Ken.
What is 400?
CD, Charles Darwin.
Yep. Ah, and it is on a roll!
The problem is, I didn't know how much C is.
One more. All right, this is question number three.
Numerals 1200.
For the actor who had the title role in The Bourne Ultimatum.
Okay, that's Matt Damon. Mm-hmm. So if you all just hold on just a second, Alex, I'll get this. MD. D we said was 500.
This isn't Final Jeopardy. You have to come up with it quicker.
I know. And this is the thing. Jennings was just like, he wasn't even batting an eye. He was just boom, 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 boom. Right. Here's the answer.
Ken.
What's 1500?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Don't even bother telling you it's MD.
I know. Notice that? It's, the answer was the number, and everybody else is supposed to figure out the middle part. That Holzhauer song goes a little bit like this.
Rarely ever went to class, a wrestling fan, a guy who publicly wished you happy birthday until it's been banned. And speaking of bannings, he approaches betting with such wisdom and planning that half the casinos won't let him in. They know if he plays, he's just gonna win. Jeopardy James, everybody knows his name. Casinos are never happy that he came. But deep down inside, he's still the same. Oh yeah, he's Jeopardy James, everybody knows his name. He says Dr. Dre instead of Dr. Dre. And we wouldn't want him any other way.
I'll let you be the judge if that was good singing or not, but what a fun gift. That's kind of a clever idea. Yeah, I didn't know that was a thing.
Is it Songbird? There's an app or Chicago company, I think, that would do that for you.
Just as we talk about this, Steve Bertrand, I thought, that's not that novel an idea. You'd think there would be a business or five out there that does that.
Songfinch, maybe, yeah.
Seriously? Huh.
Yeah, they wrote one for me a couple of years ago, but...
Are you kidding?
No.
Well, we'll have to go find that.
I don't know where it is.
Oh,
I don't know
you shouldn't have said that. Producer Ella, find us our Steve Bertrand. 608 texted in this question. It's a marijuana question, which is what we do here at WGN now. It says, King John, I have a question about a story in the news. In theory, it would be legal to have pot on a plane from Chicago to Denver. I guess in theory, because it's legal in both states. So there will now be pot at the airport. Frankly, I think there's always been. Anyway, what do they do with the police dogs who have been meticulously trained to find it and now it's okay? You can't just tell a dog that it was bad on the 31st, but now it's okay on the 1st. I don't think the premise is right, though. I don't think you can have pot at the airport.
I think you can. I think that's what they've been saying.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, then what happens?
Let me ask around here, but I think that's the word.
Yeah, right. Maybe you know, 312-981-7200. I don't know about that. Dan, you're on WGN Radio. What can we do for you or you for us? You're on the air.
Hi, John. I always wondered this for Jeopardy. I know there's a NDA for the contestants and immediate family, but how about the general audience? what keeps them quiet, unless it's a planted audience?
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, I'm looking at Dave Ennett, who is in the audience for his daughter, but you're also family. But what if I'm just Joe Blow, and I don't
exactly.
care? I got nothing to lose.
Yeah. And I think most of the audience when I was there was family, but I do think there were others who were in there. And I don't remember if we actually signed something.
Signed? Schmined. I mean, I don't know.
But, you know, they're not paying the general audience anything. So
that's
what
true.
Unless
quiet?
They, the fear is, yeah, but we'll sue you for $10,000 or $1 million. Yeah. And then, but you've never heard, I'd like to have seen that been tested. I don't want.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is the audience is planted, meaning they're immediate workers of the Jeopardy production. And so there's nobody from the outside. It's either immediate family or workers for the production of the TV show. So yeah. That's how they keep them quiet. So.
Maybe somebody else has a clue on that. Yeah.
Else.
Yeah. Interesting question. Thanks for the phone call, Dan.
Thank you.
I'm glad we couldn't help. Or I'm sorry we couldn't help, but I'm glad you called. But that's,
yeah, it's a consensus in here that they're not going to arrest you for marijuana at the airport. And if you're flying to Denver, you probably are fine.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they do have kiosks where you can drop it off if you're not flying to Denver.
What?
If you go to the airport and you realize you have marijuana with you, some places have drop-off points where you can leave it.
And
rather
then,
than just throw it away. No, it's gone. You don't get it back.
Do they keep it in safe holding for you until you get back? No, that's
I don't think
just
so.
Where you're eliminating it. This is all new to me, Steve. I didn't even think of that. I mean, the same way that you might go, oh, crap, I have a gun on me, and now I'll get in trouble. I mean, that happens.
Or a bottle of water.
Yes. I never have either. The amount of things I don't bring with me that I probably could because I just think, oh, it's too much or it'll be confiscated. So I never bring my machine gun. But I guess if you reach down and go, oh, shoot, we've got some weed on us, then there's a place you can legally, safely drop it off at the airport. But if you have it, so is this the scene then? The dog smells you, recognizes marijuana. You then demonstrate to that TSA guy or whoever's got the gun that you are going to Denver, not to New Orleans.
You show them your marijuana pre-check card.
you're not being helpful at all, are you, Steve?
This is when TSA says, you know, we weren't really looking for marijuana ever anyway.
Yeah, really. The dog's like, whatever. And then they let you go on? Like, I guess that's...
Well, Chicago police have said that there's nothing they can do. It's legal. It's legal to possess it in Chicago. O'Hare is in Chicago.
Right, but it's legal to have a gun in the state of Illinois, but it's not legal to have
right,
it at the airport. So you could carve out caveats.
I suppose you could. The transportation, the flights are controlled by the federal government. But that's just what I'm told here, that you could do it.
Wanted to share with you, too, something that happened to me yesterday. So I told you Brenda went to New Buffalo. She's going to stay there for a couple weeks and do some R&R. And I then took Amtrak back. I've done this a few times. I'm a big public transportation guy, and I don't know exactly why. Maybe because we have one car. But we could afford two, but we have one. And then I use the CTA. And so I'm taking Amtrak back from New Buffalo to Union Station last night. My train got in around 11 o'clock last night. So it's 11 o'clock downtown Chicago. It's cold. It's a weeknight. Not a lot of people around Union Station, but some. We all get off the train, and we work our way up to Madison. No, it wasn't Madison, but it was one of the streets there that boxes in Union Station. And there must have been 25 people standing there, all looking at their phones, all waiting for their Uber or Lyft. Directly in front of them. I mean, you could see them. They were right there. There must have been 20 cabs. Everybody's waiting for a ride share. Everybody's waiting for a ride share. I'm like, are you people kidding me? I looked at the cab and thought, and I literally said this. I said, are we okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because...
Or is there something wrong with the cab?
Something I don't know. He goes, no, where are you going? And so he rolls down his window. I says, I'm going to Wrigley Field. He goes, get in. By the way, that's a question they're not supposed to ask. You could say I'm going to the moon. They have to take you there.
Right.
But whatever, we got in the car and it was a lovely trip. Cost me about what it would have if I was on an Uber or Lyft.
Yeah, but you had to pay at the time.
I did. I had to have a credit card or cash.
No. And they don't really like when you pull out the credit card.
They don't, and then I get real flummoxed, and they immediately suggest a $40 tip, and I don't want to do that. But that's me being a boomer, I guess. I just don't understand why people would rather wait. Hey, John, I went on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? How about that? I went on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and had to stay silent for 2 weeks. It was very difficult. About the pot at the airports and the dogs. John, the dogs at the airports aren't looking for pot. They're sniffing for bombs. And John, what if that flight from Chicago to Denver gets diverted and lands in a not pot place? Good question. Don't have an answer. I do have an answer to this. What are the rules for selective service? A lot of rumors, given the saber rattling in this country. So what are the rules? Morning, it's John Williams. This is WGN Radio. I'm here weekdays from 9 to noon, unless I'm not. And thank you, John Hansen, for filling in with Elif and the gang yesterday. You can also follow me on social media. I'm WGN King John, WGN Radio's once upon a time news reporter, Domiti Pongo, who now works for MTV News, is debuting this week a new series of investigative crime stories at MTV. The very first story they look at is one based in Chicago. It's not R. Kelly. It's not the story that you think it might be. It's not Jussie Smollett, which is what we thought he was going to be reporting on, because that seems to be right in the MTV wheelhouse. But no, it's a different story. It's a bizarre and awful crime that he investigates. He's going to be in our studio in the 11 o'clock hour. In about a half hour, we'll visit with Mel Robbins. She's the motivational speaker, the 5-second rule author, the CNN contributor. She's got a show on Channel 9. Have you seen that yet? And she's going to be in our studio talking a little bit about what she does and how she does it. About those amnesty boxes at the airport, I guess that's what they're called. 630, thank you. Amnesty boxes, John, we see them in Las Vegas and Denver. So you go to the airport, you've got marijuana with you, you maybe are flying to some place that doesn't allow marijuana, so you want to get rid of it. So you dump your stash there. It's called an amnesty box. I learn something almost every day. 847 said, safe area for weed at the airport? Ha! This is more like hooking up security. I would just throw it in the garbage or give it to someone leaving. But a safe area for weed? I don't know. If you're the security guy and you've got to clean out the amnesty box, you've got several $100 worth of marijuana there. You give it a chance or not? You say, yes, it was good enough for them. It's probably good enough for me. John, about James Holzhauer on Jeopardy. Hopefully Jeopardy James, as they call him, from Naperville, will be our winter sport champion, because it sure won't be the Bulls or the Blackhawks, and the Bears are already out of it. I haven't given up on the Blackhawks, though. The Blackhawks have been streaky enough that shame on us for believing sometimes, but I just think that team might be our winter miracle. Hi, Elif. Hi, John. I find it very hypocritical that the federal government and the IRS will accept income tax revenue from cannabis workers while not allowing the banking system to participate. Has this been discussed at all? Maybe the next time the topic comes up. Thanks, Frank. It's come up a lot of times, Frank. It's just not much more to say about that. Is it against the federal law? Most federally insured banks will not take revenue from cannabis sales.
Right, because it's a federal law, a federal prohibition of marijuana, yeah. Right, and so they're federally regulated, so they don't want to play.
This is why I should be king. This is exactly why I should be king. This could be fixed like that. This is just a regulation. This is just a little bit of code in a computer. Just go, where are you? Illinois? Okay. Boom. You're good. You can put it in the bank now. Bing. Problem solved. I mean, how hard is that?
Well, but I think it's more than that. If you're the federal government and you think marijuana legalization is a bad idea, you don't want to facilitate states doing it.
Is that the premise for this? Is that why it's not federally allowed? I mean, obviously, some states it's not a legal substance.
Right. But I think banks are staying away from it just because they don't know where the federal government is.
They don't know where the federal. They're right over. Well, I mean, the road. They're right over there in Washington D.C., Steve.
But they are at risk if the federal government should change, administration should change policy. You know, what if someone came in and said, "I want to seize these drug monies"? Now they could be susceptible to that.
You know, Steve, they can put a man on the moon. They ought to be able to go. Illinois is a sovereign state, and it's part of the union of states that are the United States. So they have some sovereignty, and they're in the club. If they've collectively decided in that state marijuana is legal, then we'll trace the deposit. Did it come from a legal facility in Illinois? Ding. Problem solved. Ding. Problem solved.
That's cute. Do you really think we put a man on the moon?
Somebody did text in this morning and said that was shot on a soundstage in Las Vegas. I'm almost sure it was not, but these days, I'm not sure of anything. Speaking of these days, firing up Joe Fournier's op-ed cartoon on the editorial page of the Chicago Tribune is three captions. The first one shows a koala bear. It says, "Here we are, a scant few days into the new year. And what with koalas, dingoes, and kangaroos going up in flames, a violent surge in anti-Semitism." The next frame shows a man praying on his knees with a gun on his side. The fun new term, armed parishioners, and the all-too-real possibility of war with Iran. The final caption, "We already find ourselves pining for the good old days, the sweet, quiet simplicities of 2019. Yeah, we're off to kind of a rocky start here, aren't we?
Have you seen the picture of the kangaroo that's just burnt?
No.
It's just like, basically, it's gray. It's just
alive,
like
though? Did it survive?
No, it's dead. It's a statue. It looks like a statue.
Oh, really?
Of a kangaroo just standing there with its eyes closed, and it's all gray.
The number's 14 million acres. It's multiple times the size of Los Angeles.
So sad.
And it's hard to put into terms because I've heard them describe it as, you know, it's this much of Vermont, or it's five times the size of Los Angeles. But I don't know how big Los Angeles. I don't know what that means. Nothing to me, five times the size of Los Angeles. So I'm not, you know, that doesn't help me.
Yeah. Australia is a whole continent, and the whole continent was up in flames. So,
but that's it. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like the whole continent is up in flames, and it's not.
I think that's a pretty big picture in itself.
That's,
the continent.
But that's it. I don't know what they're supposed to do with this, because I'm trying to figure out all tragic. It's just tragic. I'm not saying any. I'm not trying to minimize how awful it is, how expensive it is, the lives lost, etc. I'm just trying to get in my brain how big the fire is, and I don't, or the fires are, how much area do they literally cover. And 14 million acres to me is a lot, or 14 million acres, and five times the size of the city of Los Angeles, or 10 times whatever it was. Okay, I got that, but relative to a continent, or, it's hard for me to sort of picture that in my head. There's one other thing I wanted to mention here, and it suddenly escapes me. Let me see if I've got it right here, there. Harvey Weinstein. So you've probably just, if not following the Harvey Weinstein story closely, at least you know where this one is right now, right? Harvey Weinstein on Monday was charged with sexually assaulting two women on successive nights during the Oscars week in 2013. So it brings up to 75 now, the allegations from women that led to his downfall and ignited the hashtag MeToo movement. I'm reading from the Associated Press story in the Chicago Tribune today. He could get up to 28 years in prison on these charges. The district attorney is Jackie Lacey. Jury selection is set to begin today in the New York case, but he's also got the California cases against him, too. He said that any sexual activity he had was consensual. The charges announced yesterday on the West Coast took more than 2 years to file because the women were reluctant to provide all the information necessary, according to Lacey. Neither woman has stepped forward publicly in these latest two counts against him. In Los Angeles, celebrity attorney Gloria Allred, who represents a couple of women who have come forward, said the walls of justice are closing in on Harvey Weinstein. You see him in the video now on the news stories, and he's all hunched over with a walker. He looks not at all like the guy that you've seen in the past. It's a thinner, grayer, aged, hunched over version of Harvey Weinstein, and doesn't look like the guy you saw a year ago. I guess he's had back surgery. He's 67 years old, which to me is still pretty young. Never looked really especially fit. He's had back surgery. According to, this was in the USA Today, he was almost exaggeratedly hunched over and walking slowly. Some people think that his appearance before the cameras this way is to garner some sort of sympathy, that this is him saying, oh, look at me, poor, woe is me. I don't know. But it's just surprising to see how bad he looks right now. It's 1017. Pick up a phone line. Dolores, this is John. You're on WGN. How are you, Dolores?
I'm fine. How are you? Happy New Year.
Yeah, likewise.
You know, I wonder, in talking about these fires in Australia and the animals that they're losing, what happens to the Aborigine tribes that they have that have never been brought into civilization?
I have no idea. I hadn't thought about that. That's interesting. If that's affecting their area directly, how bizarre it must be for them, huh?
Yeah, and trying to save them even. You know, how would they go about that? I was thinking about it as far as I can remember. I'm 91, but as far back as I can remember, there's always been this tribe of people in Australia that are still savage and not in with civilization at all. And how do they face a fire like this?
I've wondered in the past when they do documentaries about them and they show up with cameras and they will talk to the Aboriginal people or get close enough to them that they can see. Like if I was one of the Aboriginals, I would look around and go, wait a minute, where'd you get that coffee? You know, what's a camera? It must dawn on them because they're our fellow human beings that something's going on that we don't know about here, and how bizarre it must be for them just to even get that glimpse of us. We must look as strange to them or alien as they do to us, right? And I don't have any desire to live in the jungles. You wonder if they're thinking, denim, huh, what a good idea. You know, maybe I wonder what it's like for them. I have no idea what the story on that is, Dolores, but if I get some insight, I will pass it along. Thank you for the call. And by the way, Sandy did some math for us or looked it up. Hey, Sandy, you're on WGN. How are you?
Fine. How are you doing this morning?
Good. What have you got for me, Sandy?
Okay, I did my Google Assistant while I'm driving here, which I'm not supposed to do, and asked how many acres in Illinois, and it came out with 37,000 acres.
37 million
acres.
Acres. Yeah.
Yeah, million acres.
So if 14 million are the number in Australia, think about that. That would be like between a third and a half of the state of Illinois. Now that I can get my head around. That is stunning, isn't it?
Yeah, try taking each county and asking it how many acres in each county, and then you can get more of a visual, like go Cook, Kane, DuPage, and you can say like Northern Illinois or something.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hey, thanks for the help on that. Drive safely, Sandy.
I will. I'm where I'm going, so good. You too. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
I'm hanging up on you. You watch what you're doing, but thanks for doing the math on that. Okay, that's a better visual for somebody like me. Mel Robbins, the motivational speaker, the author of The 5-Second Rule, the CNN contributor, and more, joins us after WGN Radio News. That comes your way at 10:30. Ian Holzhauer joined us a little while ago. Did you hear that conversation? He's just delightful. His brother's brilliant, of course. I think Ian's pretty smart as well, but James Holzhauer from Naperville is the man who does sports gaming for a living. He lives in Las Vegas, where it's legal for him to play at the casinos or online. A lot of casinos, his brother said, have banned him because he's just too good at betting on sports, which I thought you and I pretty much have about the same probability of betting intelligently on sports, because you just never know. But evidently, he makes a living at it, and he is even better, it looks like, at Jeopardy. Although his brother said he didn't think he was especially better one or the other. Well, he's brilliant, of course, on Jeopardy. They've got that tournament of not just champions, but the greatest of all time that starts tonight. It's an hour-long show, two episodes this evening. Whoever wins, the first person to win the best of three matches will win. They're going to go at least a few nights, depending on how all of that goes. John, the Jeopardy audience is not planned, texted 630. You can apply for tickets on their website and go. I did this last year. They warn you in a nice way to be quiet during the taping. P.S. Johnny Gilbert is the announcer. He's now 92 years old. He's great. He's funny. He does warm up prior to the taping. Wow. I described for you how when I got off the train last night, I was out of town in beautiful New Buffalo, and then took the train into Union Station. The Amtrak experience I had was very nice. Last time I wrote it wasn't so nice, but we were kind of riding on a really cold night. It was the polar vortex a year ago, and our train was plowing through a snow squall, and it was about 20 below zero. And I just remember thinking, this is not a good way to travel. Last night, 1 year later almost to the date, it was a very nice time to travel. You can buy three levels of tickets, by the way. Have you done this? So the first level, the least expensive for my Amtrak trip from New Buffalo to Chicago. And, of course, you can go to a bunch of places, but that's almost a commute for some of us. If you do that, if you get the least expensive, it's like $12, and the seats are large and comfortable. The kind of seats you would love to have on an airplane are the least expensive on the Amtrak. The next level is where you're in two bench seats that face each other, you two, those two, and a table in between. Think the scene where they sing the song Snow on White Christmas. Snow. And they're looking at each other with a little table in between. That's the second class. And then the first class, the nicest, most expensive ticket, which is $27 or something like that, is a larger area, more expansive seat. You've got the drop-down tray in front of you. It's very comfortable, and you're all by yourself there, so... those were the three options. I take the train in, get off late last night, and there's all of these people waiting for their ride shares, and nobody was taking the cabs. There were so many cabs out front. Must have been 20 of them just hanging around Union Station. I thought there's a problem here. Like, the cabs aren't working, or I don't know what, but I came up to the first guy and said, "Are you a cab?" He said, "Yeah, get in." Took me home for the same amount of money it would have cost me had I done my Uber. John, I only use cabs when I come downtown for the day. What's the point of waiting for a rideshare? Says 630. 708 said, I took a cab ride, though, home from Midway to the South Suburbs. He was not happy to be going to the South Suburbs. They never want to come back a long distance, but they charge you a premium if you go far enough away from the airport, right? It's like time and a half outside the zone because they do have to make some money coming back. Anyway, he was not happy going to the South Suburbs. He drove like a maniac. I just closed my eyes. For this reason, I will never use a cab. And about my visiting on occasion New Buffalo, John, New Buffalo has had its charm blown away. The weekend crowds are loud and drunk. When they put that brew pub in a church, it turned into Pottersville. Sorry you didn't get to experience the sweet town that it once was. Well, we've been there in the warm weather, too. I don't know if you've been there, but they had this big old white church with a big, tall, white steeple, and then an arched, you know, roof on the top of the steeple goes way up high. I don't remember now if there's a bell or a weather vane up there, but there seems to be some metal work. And it looks like a great big white church. And it just says brewery or something in the front of it. They didn't make great efforts to not make it look like a church. I guess those churches get decommissioned or something. So now it's a brew pub. When you go inside, it's actually pretty nice. Pretty good beer, pretty good food. It's buzzing in there.
Well, what's the problem with that?
It just looks... I'm not charmed by, oh, cool, it's a church. It looks almost sacrilegious to me. And I'm not a religious person. But it just doesn't look that clever and looks almost inappropriate. Our news click, the daily web poll question at WGNradio.com. We always feature it on my Facebook page. On social media, I'm WGN King John, asked, which are you? I support the president's actions in Iraq, obviously versus Iran, but we phrased it in Iraq. I'm on the fence about this, and I don't support the president's actions in Iraq. 22% of you said you're with the president on this. 11% of you are still undecided. You're on the fence. 66% in our completely unscientific poll said you do not support the president's actions, the United States' actions, remember, in Iraq. I'm surprised that it is that way. 22, 11, and 66. I don't entirely understand the why of this. That is, I was looking at the timeline again, right? We pull out of the nuclear accord. We put sanctions on them. Then December 27th, 30 rockets were fired, probably by Iranian forces, into an Iraqi military compound. And that killed an American contractor. That American contractor, if you will, might have been the first domino, right? So then 2 days later, we retaliate with airstrikes on five Iranian-backed militia. Then they retaliate. That is, there's a mob at our embassy. They break into the embassy. This is just a mob of people. But they break into our embassy. Nobody was killed or injured in that. But the Iraqi forces didn't help us much. And it was an embarrassing scene for us around New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Okay. And then the next thing is we take out this General Soleimani and that other guy, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandi. So then we take out what would be their equivalent of our vice president, CIA director, and CENTCOM director. I mean, all kind of rolled into one. You and I have never heard of this guy. The people who are supposed to know about these things do know about this guy. And he was the mastermind of a lot of killings around the world and of U.S. soldiers. So he would be a bad person, a bad actor, as they say. But if you're just doing the tit for tat, it seemed to me like the one that preceded that was the activity at the embassy, which was embarrassing. But this, to me, just never seemed to be sort of commensurate with the previous action.
Well, the difference here is
wasn't proportional.
It's a government official too. It's not a, you know, a terrorist or terrorist organization, even though he certainly directed them. This guy, you know, he draws his paycheck from the Iranian government, so that becomes a much more direct act against the state of Iran.
Against the state of Iran, yeah, understood.
Right, and I mean, also it's the difference between, you know, attacking some a militia in the great northwest in Idaho or something, or shooting a high government official.
You don't even want to say it. I understand that.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
No, because it's just it seems offensive and it seems reactionary. And that's the thing. To me, I was kind of following this awful ping pong match we were playing with them, and then all of a sudden we just got out a sledgehammer and slammed the table. And plenty of people, I'm looking at our news click, and I'm following this story like you are, and a lot of people, including a lot of Republicans, are saying, yeah, that's what happens. We told you not to do it. This is what happens. Thank God we're finally cleaning up this mess. And others of us are just worried that maybe we are biting off more than is necessary. For instance, is the world a better place that this Soleimani guy is gone? It's very easy to argue yes, but not knowing what's going to happen next makes you wonder, what have we started here? What have we got ourselves into? And that's where we are today. So I've got my computer up, and I'm constantly just going to various news sites to see, when is that other shoe going to fall? And as of 10:36 in the morning, Central Time, on Tuesday, it seems like...
You've been doing a great job today, by the way.
Nothing specifically has happened. Nothing specifically has happened in response to that. But you wonder, when that other thing happens, now what do we do? And do you, for instance, really want to take out 52 sites, whatever those are, cultural or otherwise? It's a sort of chess match I don't think any of us wants to play. This daily barrage of news like this is so exhausting, isn't it? So the question yesterday was, which are you? 66% of you do not support the president's aggressive actions, and 33% of you are on the fence or are with the president in this. Okay, appreciate your thoughts and calls, but if I'm clear on the timeline, then this is our response to the last action that they did was the action at the embassy, and this is our response to that.
I think that the Bush or the Trump administration would argue against you, John, in saying that this wasn't one of the tats or the tits. This was about a threat coming, that they knew that, that's what they're saying, that this was, they knew there was a, I think the president said, imminent attack against Americans or many Americans, and that's why they had to act.
And to me, then, what is that? So what was the imminent threat? Was it something specific, or is it that this is what this guy does for a living? He gets up and plots to kill people. He's a terrible... Every day this man draws air is an imminent attack on the United States or its citizens. And that's the only way I see or interpret this. That must be the way we're viewing the justification for assassinating him or killing him. Those are different words. They have different definitions. Fight amongst yourselves about that. But I guess that's where we are. And so I open up my computer and say, okay, where are we now? I turn on the radio. What is Bertrand saying about this latest story? It is 10:38 on WGN. Hey, David, it's John. You're on the air. What can I do for you, Dave?
Hi, John. Listening to you, I guess my belief is the president, you know, one-upmanship is so important to him. And so President Obama took out Osama bin Laden in his presidency. And so I feel President Trump thought, all right, I took out somebody, too, even better. I think there was even a comment somewhere in the last few days I heard somebody say, this guy was worse than Osama bin Laden or more important.
Yes, you know?
So
I've heard that, too.
He took out a guy in his presidency just like Obama did. But his was better.
I know that's a childish way to go about things, but that's my read on it too. That whatever the motivation was, this is actually more consequential than Osama bin Laden. Yeah. Okay, thanks for the phone call.
Well, sure.
I appreciate it, Dave. Thanks for joining us. It's 10:38. There's a young man who just strolled into the studio that I recognize. We'll change subjects here with Doma T. Pongo, former WGN radio news reporter. Now he's so hip. He's too cool for school now. He's at MTV News. Dominator, how are you? Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Saw your piece on online.
Yeah.
They debuted it last, was it last night or
last
is that
night.
Tonight?
Last night. Well, we had a private screening last night, so I got a chance to see how some of our mutual friends feel about it. A couple media folks were out there and some community activists, people who are really close to this Kanika Jenkins story, which is the premiere episode, came out and checked it out last night.
I have a couple questions for you about that.
Yes.
Doma T, stay right there. Doma T. Pongo is in our studio. You may know him from MTV News.
I first learned of Kanika Jenkins as a reporter on Chicago's WGN radio. Immediately, I felt a connection to her. I'm in my 20s, close in age to Kanika, and we both came from similar neighborhoods in Chicago.
This ain't my opus, it's just a quote from the dope.
Well, I was once coming up as a rapper and MC. Her story reminded me of why I made the change to journalism, to tackle the issues that profoundly affect the people of Chicago.
10:43, so that's part of the intro to the piece that Doma T. Pongo just dropped for MTV News.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were an up-and-coming rapper at one point.
Yeah, that was actually my precursor to journalism.
Yeah,
it taught me, I realized that it wasn't so much the music that drew me, but the idea of telling stories and being a storyteller. And that's what hip-hop did for me, and I kind of used that in journalism.
How were you, pretty good?
I was excellent, John.
You got a good voice. You got a good look.
How
do you transition? What keeps somebody from you? Obviously, you have a successful career doing what you're doing, but I wonder what keeps somebody like you at that point in your life from not becoming a nationally known hip-hop star, make a living doing it.
Yeah, I think the main thing was I thought practically about a life on tour and said, I don't know if I really want to go on tour and live on the road and eat crappy food and be on the tour bus.
Were you writing your own songs, right?
Writing my own songs.
Your own raps.
And at that point, I hadn't really broken through. Like, I hadn't done anything that was getting me big national attention. So I didn't really have something concrete, but journalism really opened up for me.
And some hip-hop stars and rap stars are vulnerable and honest.
Yeah.
Juice WRLD. Some of them are thuggish. Some of them are, you know, it seems to me like they have their personalities that come through. What was your persona or personality as a musician or a musical actor?
You hit it on the head. Vulnerable, honest, socially conscious, heavy emphasis on lyricism. How can I play with syllables and wordplay and get a message across that actually means something?
Are you a singer? Do you sing well, too?
No, not at all. I'm terrible as a singer. That's the other thing, too.
Let's hear some. Try it. Let's see.
We'll be the judge.
Listen, you don't want to do that. Right. You don't want anybody to crash today. But the thing is, though, because socially conscious music doesn't play well in clubs or on the radio, I had a longer journey to what success would look like as a rapper than I would doing anything else. So I was like, is this a passion or is this something that's therapeutic and cathartic? And it's more cathartic, it's more.
So you could still do it.
Yeah. And I still write, even as I was dealing with these cases, like the Kanika Jenkins case, it hit me so deeply personally that I had to find ways to decompress, and writing verses was my way of doing that.
before the first of the year, you were on with us and you were talking about this new series. You sort of hinted at it on the air, but you couldn't say too much specifically about it. But you said it's an investigative series that MTV is doing. It's about these crimes. The first one is going to debut a Chicago story. So we thought it's either R. Kelly or Jussie Smollett.
That's right.
But I guess those stories have been fairly investigated.
Yeah.
Although we certainly recall the Kanika Jenkins story. I don't know that it got the attention that those stories did.
Mm-hmm.
But was it a national story? Did people pay attention to her?
Like crazy. This thing was a national phenomenon. There were internet detectives that were trying to, and amateur detectives. Internet
oh, that's
sleuths.
Right. Because yes. I don't think it was originally what happened, but it was the trying to sort of figure out what happened after the fact.
Yeah, and just to remind folks, Kanika Jenkins found frozen to death in a walk-in freezer at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Rosemont.
When?
In September of 2017.
Huh.
And we began shooting this in 2018, actually.
Really?
Yeah. And I was working on that while I was doing everything here, everything behind the scenes.
So you were covering that originally.
I was covering that originally in real time. I hadn't released much, you know, of the doc. You know, I couldn't release anything from the documentary back then, but I was covering that, of course, for WGN Radio in addition to covering it for MTV behind the scenes.
So she's drunk at that hotel that night, partying. Right. Was it some special occasion?
A friend's birthday.
And the video that you show, describe the video of her.
Yeah, the video that you see Kanika walking, stumbling through a hotel hallway. And the last time you see her, she's stumbling through a kitchen at the Crown Plaza Hotel, rounds a corner, and you don't see her on that surveillance camera anymore.
She disappears from view.
And
what is she doing in the kitchen?
That's what the interview is trying to figure out.
But she
was she led there? Was she assaulted?
We don't see any. But we don't see anybody.
We don't see anyone.
And when she's stumbling down the halls, she is so drunk. She's banging into the walls. She can barely stand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to see somebody that profoundly drunk, one of the things you have is, oh boy, she's going to feel terrible tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
I mean, she's that drunk, right?
Yes,
or
yes.
At least is acting that drunk. Then we see her in the video in the kitchen.
Yes.
And then we don't see her again.
She disappears from view, and that's the last time we see her. So now this is where the internet detectives come in. So the internet detectives had all kinds of theories. They had theories that someone altered the video, and she was actually being led down that hallway by someone who had been Photoshopped out of it. Video wise, like these are the theories. I'm not saying that this is what happened. These are the theories that we explore.
Sure, but I guess, this story was ripe for that sort of, you know,
conjecture.
Because it's so weird that she ends up in the freezer.
Like,
in the,
how does that happen?
It's a walk-in freezer.
Walk-in freezer. How does that happen? How does a hotel patron even end up in the kitchen of a hotel?
But when she's in there and the door closes behind her.
That's right.
You can't open it from the inside?
You can. And that's what made this such a mystery. There's a latch inside the freezer that you can push open. That's one of those things. That's not a spoiler, but that's one of those things that we
I didn't
look
know
at
that.
In the documentary.
I presume it was functional. I mean, if she had been coherent enough,
mm-hmm.
and saw it, she would have thought to push it down and it would have opened up.
Unless, of course, if the theories are true or were true, unless somebody else was involved.
Yeah.
And that's why people thought someone else was involved.
What was the cause of death?
The cause of death, according to the medical examiner's office, was hypothermia, and the death was ruled an accident.
So she froze to death
in that freezer. What was found in her system was, of course, the alcohol, but also a medication that's consistent with epilepsy or migraines. And so people were wondering, was this a party drug? Was she drugged? It isn't considered a party drug. So what was that drug? That's something else we explore in the series as well.
Well, did she have a falling out with a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or were there other people that might be suspect to do her harm?
We dig into all of that in the series. It comes on 8 o'clock Central Wednesday night.
But it's also conceivable, Domati, that she was so drunk, she's stammering down the hall, finds her way in the kitchen. It doesn't make any sense because she's that drunk.
Mm-hmm.
She sure is looking at it in the video. And I don't know why or how she got into that freezer. It's either open or she opens it. But I guess my point is, mm-hmm. as, you know, incomprehensible or illogical all this is, it also makes sense if you're just so drunk, you're not even hardly responsible for your actions.
And that's what the Rosemont Police Department believes. They said, you know, we got the first on-record interview with the superintendent of police in Rosemont, and that appears in the documentary. And that's what he says. He says this is an accident.
Yeah.
And so the main thing, though, that we explore, and in my opinion, one of the most riveting parts of the documentary is this conversation about police community relations. Why didn't activists, because activists went out and protested at Crown Plaza for about 2 months straight, every day for about 2 months. Hmm. Why were activists mobilizing? Well, that's because around this time, you remember, we were still dealing with the aftermath of the Laquan McDonald shooting. And so people did not believe what the police had to say about anything as related to something that happened to black people. It's like, we can't trust them. They didn't heighten the level of urgency. They closed this case too soon. This is what activists are saying. And so we hear from the activists as well. Jamal Green, known activist in many circles here in Chicago, appears in the documentary as well.
What does Kanika Jenkins' family say?
We haven't heard from her since this released, but
her sister, you mean, or her mother?
Her mother.
Yeah.
We as far as speaking, because she's involved with ongoing litigation with the Crown Plaza Hotel.
Huh.
So it's a very delicate situation legally in terms of what she's saying publicly. But one thing I can say is that these kids, her friends, Kanika's friends, who were in the hotel room that night, have been cyberbullied to no end. And
how old are they? How old was she again?
She was 19 at the time, so that put the friends in the early 20s now, 22, 21.
Cyberbullying, what's going on?
People out online saying that they had something to do with the passing of their friend. They're saying that the friends, maybe the friends set her up. That's one of the theories. And we explore that theory in the documentary. And I've just got to say, it's you have to... These people are real people. Don't go online badgering Irene or Bree Bree. These are Kanika's friends. They still have to live with the loss of their friend. And I think that people who love Kanika, who love her, who love her friends, her circle, will be pleased with the documentary because of the way we'd spoken to them about them and that whole situation and their friendship.
Doma T. Pago is in our studio, former WGN radio newsman, host of MTV News. This Kanika Jenkins investigative piece on MTV True Life Crime. So when can we watch this on TV?
It's going to be simulcast on both MTV and VH1, commercial free, Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central.
Does it fill the whole hour, or are there other stories that you tell?
Fills the whole hour. Huh. Now, for the rest of the series, this is an 8-episode docuseries. So the following week, continue to tune in. We're doing multiple stories. We investigate the stabbing of Junior Guzman Feliz, who was killed in the Bronx, caught on camera, viciously stabbed. He was 15 years old, stabbed, I believe, 17 times. And we investigate why he was stabbed. What happened? Was this a gang ordered murder? Was he in the wrong place at the wrong time? We investigate the passing of Mujay Dumbaya, who was comes from a family who immigrated from West Africa, came to Michigan, only to find out that their daughter would be assaulted and eventually killed. And we look into who did it and why.
Well, stories are always so tragic, aren't they, Doma T? Where somebody comes to this country, I'm thinking of the young lady whose name escapes me now, but the Chinese exchange student who was a graduate student at the University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their families are like, oh, America is this great beacon of hope and education and freedom and opportunity. And it's a little scary, but they'll be fine. And then something tragic happens. Mm-hmm. And it's awful when it happens to somebody from the U.S., but it must just be another layer of tragedy or sorrow to the parents that send their kids off to America, and then, son of a gun, something bad happens.
They escaped war in Liberia.
Exactly.
And went to Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah, you think that would be a safe play.
Exactly. It, on paper, everything made sense. I mean, the family had seen Mujay's father was murdered as a result of this war, like in this story, like
in Liberia,
like this story has so many. It almost is like a success story about this family escaping the war-torn conditions, getting refugee status in America, moving to Grand Rapids, Michigan, in the suburbs, and you think they're going to be okay, and then this terrible thing happens. These are the type of stories we tell.
Is there always a racial component to this?
No, it just so happens that that marginalized communities just ended up being kind of the lens that we look through these stories. I think in part because a lot of these stories went viral and people were having conversations online. And it just so happens that black communities over-index in the use of Twitter. Black Twitter is a force on its own.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yes.
Because the white community uses, the president uses, everybody uses Twitter.
Oh, yeah, everybody uses Twitter. But you think it's more powerful? A little differently. Because when things happen to marginalized communities, oftentimes investigators don't pay close enough attention unless you raise concerns. And then you start to see people dive into action. And so every time something happens, folks are tweeting, hey, look into this, speak up for us. We don't want this to fall by the wayside, you know, because people can't afford personal independent autopsies. These families can't afford the best lawyers or crisis managers to help them through these things. Versus if something happens to someone from a middle class or affluent family, you have the resources to, you know, get the authorities involved.
So is it your interpretation then that all of the chatter on social media after Kanika Jenkins' death mm-hmm. wasn't just gossip? It was activism. It was people trying to help.
Yes. Trying to get justice for Kanika if this was a crime, and trying to help her mother find answers. But it's not just marginalized communities, though. You also have the story of Jerrica Binks, which that preview is up at MTV.com as well. Jerrica Binks was a runner who went missing. White girl, young, 24 years old, beautiful family in Utah, went and met with her family, asked questions, met with the investigators, homicide detectives, trying to figure out, was this a homicide?
Are you doing all these stories, Domati?
Hosting the whole series, all the stories.
Wow.
8 episodes. You've got Sarah Stern in New Jersey, young white girl, art student, brilliant, passed away.
We're out of time, Dome. So tonight...
Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, rather.
Yes.
Last night was the premiere. Wednesday night on TV.
Yes.
On VH1 and MTV. And then is it every Wednesday night?
And then it's every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Central. And for all those logistics, all that information, you can follow me at Domati, D-O-M-E-T-I _ on social media. And, of course, at MTV and at MTV News.
Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, John.
Congratulations. I'm sorry these are the topics, but they need investigation. Sounds like you've done good work so far.
Well, thank you for making this a home for me. And this is cathartic to unpack with you, as always. I thank you for being here for real.
I don't mean to be fear-mongering, but if we go to World War XII here in the next few weeks or whatever, there's a lot of chatter about, okay, what about conscription? What about the draft? What about selective service? Okay, maybe nobody's going to get drafted. We don't have a draft right now. But what happens? Why did the selective service system shut down? A spokesperson from that agency joins us after the news. Our news click, the daily web poll question, asked you how you feel about the U.S. actions in Iraq against Iran and others. You had three options. I support the president's actions. I'm on the fence, and I don't support the president's actions. 66% of you are saying you are not on the bus. 22% of you are with the president. 11% of you are on the fence. On social media, I'm WGN King John. There's a conversation about that going on there. The world is watching also the fires in Australia. And I was trying to get my head around the size of these things. And then somebody texted in and said, John, the Australian fires have essentially burned up the state of Vermont and New Hampshire combined. Here again, that doesn't help me. I hate to belabor the point, but I don't know how big Vermont and New Hampshire are, except they're so small you can't actually fit the words inside them on a map. So they're really small. I know that small on a map is still big. So the acreage, and it's obviously changing by the day, the acreage that I just saw that the fires have damaged in Australia is now 21 million acres. Illinois is 37 million acres. So well over half the size of the state of Illinois now is the area that has been burned in the Australia fires. It made me think, Producer Olive, how big is Iowa in acres?
35.7 million acres, John.
Well, that's surprising. Iowa is almost the same area as Illinois. Who knew?
Yeah, it's a different body shape. One's tall and slim, and one's
exactly
SpongeBob.
So I would have lost that in a trivia contest. If you would have asked me one, I would have not guessed the other is that close to us. But either way, here comes Australia. Imagine that, almost the size of Iowa, completely burned to the ground. The other story, obviously, that the world is watching is what does now happen in the Middle East. And it was the strangest set of dominoes, wasn't it? Because then people said, oh, my God, World War III started trending. Literally, it did, right? And then if that happens, then who's going to fight for us? And while we have a volunteer corps We did not draft people after 9/11, remember, but we did call up the National Guard and we activated personnel. But what would happen if we did? So many people, this is my understanding, rushed to the web to figure out if they or their kids or grandkids have to fight or will get drafted. This is the way it goes, that it actually either that shut down the Selective Service website, or maybe somebody hacked it to shut it down and further fanned the flames of fear. I don't know exactly how all of that went down. Wadi Akur is the Selective Services Chief of Staff, and he's on the phone to answer some questions for us. Wadi, it's John Williamson. You're on WGN in Chicago. Thanks for joining us. Hi.
Good morning, John. Thank you for having me on.
Talk to me a little bit about what happened to the site, first of all.
Oh, that's unfortunately, the timing was a little bit bad with the recent events. We had an uptick in traffic during our scheduled network maintenance, which caused a temporary outage of service. But we're back up now, we're up and running, and everybody can register.
Hooray! And then what happens? what about these rumors? We don't have a draft in peacetime right now in the United States, do we? In fact, by law, we don't have a draft, right?
Absolutely not. We live in an age of hyper-information that is not always accurate. We've seen a lot of surges in, you know, tweets, memes, parody news articles. There's a tweet from a fake presidential account saying, you know, the draft begins tomorrow. A lot of people believe that. And there have been questions about who is required to register.
All right, let's start there.
The answer
there.
To that
Go ahead.
Is men. You know, all men in America, including documented and undocumented immigrants, are required to register within 30 days of their 18th birthday. The law provides them a grace period up until age 25, but once you turn 26, it's too late to register.
Women don't have to register, huh?
Women do not have to register as of now. There is a National Commission on Military, National, and Public Service that is evaluating this issue, and they will provide the recommendation to Congress in March.
What is the purpose of Selective Service, then?
Selective Service is our third tier of national defense. Though we're in peacetime, we always like to be ready.
So we are literally just building a database of names of men who would be available to the armed services if we need them.
Absolutely, and we've been doing it since the Carter administration in the 80s.
So you said that if you are an undocumented man here, an undocumented immigrant, you are required to register?
You are required to register. In fact, it can delay your citizenship process up to 5 years.
If you later try to apply and you hadn't registered?
Yes.
Yeah, that's assuming that the person would try and do so legally. I suppose if you're here illegally and have no intention of going through the process, technically you are also required to register, but I don't suppose compliance in that group is very high, huh?
I can honestly say it is not right now. We are focusing our social media efforts to address that. We're going to get a website up in Spanish soon with a Spanish translation so they understand what Selective Service is. You know, there's a little bit of confusion with Selective Service and joining the military with the immigrants. And we want to clarify that registration with Selective Service is not signing up for the military.
But what is it?
It is just simply putting your name on standby in case your country ever calls for you, which is highly unlikely at this point.
Yeah, I mean, how does that go? You said it's the third tier, so I guess active duty, then National Guardsmen, is that the second tier?
Our active duty, our reserve forces, and then Selective Service.
Yeah.
And in order for a draft to be, you know, instated, it would take an act of Congress and a signature from the president. So this is something that would not happen overnight. You would, if it was coming, we would hear about it.
So just to be clear then, if you're gay, that doesn't affect your status or your eligibility. If you're a legal alien, if you're an illegal alien, whatever the language is around those concepts, there's no carve-outs. What about if you're a conscientious objector? What if your religious beliefs preclude you from fighting in a war? Can you avoid the Selective Service that way?
You cannot avoid selective service registration if you're a conscientious objector. So in peacetime, it doesn't matter what you are. We just care if you're registered. Now, if a draft were ever called, which is very unlikely, we would then have, if you're a conscientious objector, you would make your appeal to a local board, and they would make that determination.
Is that I know this is all just theoretical then, and I understand how unlikely this is, but there it is. So let's just talk about that. If I made an appeal saying my religious beliefs are I couldn't kill somebody, I presume that's what the conscientious objector would say, then would they not include me in the military? Would that be a way out?
It's based on the local board member's decision. You know, they need to have a consensus if you're a conscientious objector. And you have to have a preponderance of evidence. You know, you need to show that you've always been opposed to war. You know, you can't just suddenly be opposed to war because there was a draft called.
Or because of the war that you're being asked to fight in. I would have fought in World War II. I might not have wanted to fight in Vietnam, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then does it require a declaration of war? Because that gets a little tricky these days. Does the president have the authority to do what he's doing, to commit more troops and to build up in the Middle East? And if it escalates, then, you know, does it have to be officially declared a war for some of these things to trip?
That is a great question. Like I mentioned earlier, it's the determination of Congress and the president whether a draft is to be called for. So whether we're at war or not, it's up to them.
Yeah. Well, then, at the same time that you guys were doing your routine maintenance on the site?
Yes, sir.
That's when people started wondering what's going to happen with all of these eligible people. And all of those people going to the site at the same time that you were doing routine maintenance is what shut the selective service system down for a while.
Horrible, horrible timing, but it was not nefarious.
It was not a hack, in other words. This wasn't Iran or Iraq actually hacking into our governmental system.
It was not.
Do you share the data? So if I'm an 18, 19-year-old male and I say, okay, what information do you get from me, and who do you share that with?
We just need your name, your birthday, and your social security number. And the only information that we share with other agencies is whether you are registered or not. Not anything else.
You don't look up whether or not I've been convicted of a crime, or I'm just trying to think of all the things that I might not want you to share at all. My address, for that matter. Do you share my cell phone number, any of those things?
I would never, and our agency would never share personal identifiable information like that, like a cell phone number. No, sir. Just whether you're registered or not.
Yeah. And actually, you don't acquire that anyway, do you?
Cell phone number? Well, we have recently added cell phones and emails to the registration form just as a means to get in better contact just in case we're ever needed.
Yeah. You keep saying that, just in case we're ever needed.
We're a great insurance policy.
Yeah, I guess that's it, isn't it? I mean, there's two ways to look at this. One is an individual who's terrified of the notion of going to a war, or adamantly doesn't want to go to a war that they don't believe in. A, we're not at war. And B, if we do go to war, then in fact, our citizens are our defense for our freedom. So if you look at it from that perspective, then by golly, everybody needs to play along. This is our defense we're talking about here.
It's our country.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, Wadi, anything else that I need to ask from you? I hadn't thought about this since I guess my son's turned 18. How does somebody do that, by the way? Do they go online? Is that how you do it?
Yes, sir. That's what we'd like you to do. I'd like to remind your audience, if there's any men in their lives that are between the ages of 18 to 25 that have not registered with Selective Service, please go to our website at www.sss.gov and register. If you do not register by age 26, you are ineligible for federal employment, federal student aid, and federally funded job training. Not to mention state-based financial aid in 31 states, including Illinois.
Is it a criminal? Are the criminal prosecutions for not registering? We're getting questions about this now.
There is, but nobody has been prosecuted since the 80s. The Congress has decided, rather than punish people in peacetime, to incentivize registration with Selective Service through the means I just mentioned.
Okay, so 219 said, is there a penalty for not registering? There is, but it sounds like, it might be financially disadvantageous to you, but nobody's going to go to jail for this.
You couldn't work for the government.
You could not work for the federal government, correct?
And that's America's biggest employers, the government. There's millions of jobs, and they pay great.
815, if they have another draft, will bunions get me out of service? Ha ha. 847 says, if my son registers, would he be more likely to be called in the case of a draft? Well, of course he would. He would. Does this tell me anything about the order in which I would be drafted?
Well, the draft process is completely random. We hold a lottery, but this is why we also encourage every man in America to register. The more men who register, the more fair and equitable the system is.
Okay, but so let me ask that question in a different way. If these are very tense times and moms are worried about their boys...
And they are.
I hate to present this to you, but would they be better off just not registering for a few years?
Oh, that's right, because you could wait until you're 20.
I mean, if you're only going to take people from the registration, does that get them out of it?
That's a great question. That's how the law is written, and as an executive agency, we follow the law. So between 18 and 25 have to register. I encourage everyone to register as soon as they turn 18.
Vietnam was never declared a war, says 312, yet thousands were drafted. Yeah, I don't know how they got around that now that 312 mentions it. Do you have any observation or comment about that, Yadi?
I have no comment on that, sir. I was not even alive during the Vietnam War.
John, look at ABC News link using map. Okay, these are some of the questions that have come in. Wadi, a couple of calls. All right, let's just take a couple quick calls with Wadi. He is... let me get your title right. The Selective Services Chief of Staff, Wadi Yakur, is on a phone line. Where are you from, Wadi? How does a person fall into this line of work, by the way?
I am from Washington State originally, and I came over here when the president swore into office on January 20th.
Yeah, I presume this is a political appointment. This is you're part of the administration's appointed list. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
John on line one, you're on WGN. Hi, John, you're on the air.
How you doing, John? Hey, Wadi, how can President Trump ask people to go off the service when he himself refused to even enlist three different times?
You don't have to answer that. I mean, that's a rhetorical question, but Wadi, do you have a comment on that?
The president went through the process. He presented himself to the local board members. They made that determination. And that's that.
Line two, I'm going to skip your question. Line three is Andy, you're on WGN. Hi, Andy, you're on the air.
Hey, I am curious. What if you don't know if you are registered? Is there a way to find out?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. You can go on to SSS.gov, and you can verify whether you are registered or not. And, in fact, we recently added, in our modernization efforts, you can now print out your registration card, cut it out, and keep it in your wallet rather than send it through the mail.
SSS.gov, type in your information,
yes,
see if you're there. If you're not, register between the ages of 18 and 25. Okay. Nice to visit with you, Wadi. If more questions come up along these lines, we'll give you a call. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me on, John. You have a great day.
Wadi Yakur is the Selective Services Chief of Staff. 11:27. Steve, you inhaled with your mouth.
Well, I'm just
made
thinking.
Me wonder.
I mean, So I think it's your duty. You're a citizen to register when you're 18. I did.
Yeah, sure.
My son did.
Yeah. But yeah, mine did too.
Yeah.
But I never, but at the time, I'm trying to think of now what the age were of my boys, because come think of it, that was post 9/11, right? That was 10 years ago, 30, 20. Yeah, so my boys had just turned 18 just prior to 9/11, at least one of them had.
But if you wait until you're 25, to register, mm-hmm. which you can do apparently legally, the chances of you ever being drafted, I think, would be pretty small.
Why do you say? Well,
if they would take,
well, you'd avoid it for 7 years, right?
Right.
Oh, in other words, do they take 18-year-olds before 25-year-olds?
Yeah, I don't know.
He said it was completely random. My interpretation of that conversation was, of those pool of people age 18 to 25, it's completely random.
Within that circle? Because...
Yeah, 18 to 25. I don't think they randomly pick from 18-year-olds, then randomly pick from 19-year-olds, et cetera. Is that what you're wondering?
I'm just wondering if a 25-year-old is less likely to be chosen than an 18 or 19-year-old, yes.
You know what, Aleph? Call him back and ask him that, at least off the air.
I mean, the answer is probably they don't know because they don't have a draft. You know, that's what he would probably tell you. When they created the draft again, then they'd come up with the process.
I get the feeling he was answering some questions he'd never even thought of before there, Steve.
That seemed like a pretty big loophole, didn't it?
Well, yeah, and every time he would answer a question with, that's a really good question, I don't know if he was saying that because it's a question that he's heard 1,000 times and he has the answer to it, or he's just now trying to figure out what the answer is. For instance, your suggestion that you wait until your son is 24 to tell them to register, so as at least for the next 6 years to insulate them from some potential madness. How has that not occurred to him before? How does he not know the answer to that question? But it sounds like, but then, you know, as he thought it out loud, he says, well... the same way I do when I'm trying to figure out things.
But I think Thomas Jefferson would tell us it's our duty to do it.
I know that. This sounds terribly unpatriotic.
Did they do it in high school? Were they required to do it in high school? Automatically? Because I don't know if my son is registered or not.
You might
terrible,
well, Mary, if you,
I can't check because I need a social security number.
I was just going to say, if you know his S number, just randomly send him a text. Hey, hon, just wondering, what's your SS number?
Just wondering, because he's 23.
I'm going to send you some money. Give mom your social security number. Don't ask. It's 11:27, although it is kind of an interesting litmus test for where we are as a country right now. If this is on your mind, what would your counsel be to your son, not your daughter? I'm surprised women aren't registering too. But what would you tell your son to do? Lots of texts continue to come in about selective service. 630 says, John, you cannot enter for FAFSA, that would be financial aid, for school without entering your name in the selective service for men.
Now I do remember that.
Yes. You can't get scholarship money or financial aid from the federal government unless you have registered for selective service.
That's how they get you.
That's how they get guys. But it's not how they get gals.
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
I'm just in this day and age, I'm surprised to see that. Women can serve in combat positions.
Right.
About selective service, Steve Bertrand, a text has just poured in from my nephew, who listens to us. I believe he lives in Arizona right now. He was in Missouri. I think he just moved to Arizona. He said, my high school was very proactive in letting men know about the selective service. I applied when I was 18. I'd be terrible in war, but considered it a patriotic duty to at least be on the list. Attaboy, David. Good for you. But there's a young man who is wiry, was not an athlete in school, was a great kid. And I can imagine him imagining himself running with a gun. But I suppose there were a lot of young men in previous wars who felt the same thing. And there they were. Producer Aleph did call our guest back and off the air, asked him the question Steve Bertrand raised. And that is, if selective service is for those young men between the ages of 18 and 25, is the pool of people who are drafted chosen randomly from 18 to 25, or is it year by year? Steve was wondering if maybe the longer you waited, well, if you're not in the system, then you're not in the system, so they're not going to be able to draft you. By the way, we don't have a draft. It would require Congress,
and we're not at war.
We're not going to have a draft. This is how our government works, though. This is the sort of responsibility that we ask our young men to assume, so we should know this, right? But here's what he said, Steve, that the 18 and 19-year-olds would be the last asked to serve. They would start at age 20. The 20-year-olds would be the first drafted.
And then they'd go up.
And then they would go to the 21-year-olds and randomly select from 21-year-olds. And if they didn't have enough then they would go 22, 23, 24, 25. And then they would go back to 18 and 19-year-olds.
Interesting.
I don't, you know, that's just a horrible game of roulette there, and why they play it that way. Why, for instance, give an 18-year-old a break that you don't give a 20-year-old?
Well, a 20-year-old's more mature than an 18-year-old.
I suppose so. Maybe they would literally be better poised to do this.
Right.
But then why not a 25-year-old first? Maybe because they're older and... I don't know what the logic is. They're not too old. They're every bit as agile and fit, maybe even more so than a 20-year-old. But 20-year-olds would be the first to go, then 21, 22, all the way up to 25, and then 18 and 19-year-olds would be the last selected, according to Wadi Yakur, who was on with us just moments ago, the Selective Services Chief of Staff. Again, we're not at war. There is no draft. It would require an act of Congress, and that the Selective Service population would be the third chosen. First, it would be those that are active and have volunteered. Then it would be the reserves. And then it would be those that have been drafted, were there a draft. But I reached out to Ray Kaplan, too. Hey, Ray, it's John Williams. How are you?
Hi, John. Good, thank you. How are you?
Good. Ray Kaplan of the Kaplan Law Firm, who specializes in college debt. Ray, somebody said, my son recently had to answer the question about selective service to be eligible for a college scholarship. Do you know that to be true on a FAFSA form?
Yes, there is a provision on the FAFSA form, which in order to be eligible that you, I can't remember the exact language, but yes, that actually is the case.
Huh. So I guess they have a way of checking that. But I mean, I could not get a scholarship from the federal government. And you always tell us to borrow first from the federal government or federally sponsored loans as opposed to private sector. So a young man has to register for selective service in order to be eligible. Is that right?
Right. But as you guys were talking about earlier, it's only if a draft were imposed. And it's basically just a way for the government to have a record of people that would be eligible in terms of age and et cetera, and to kind of have them in the system. So I think it's more of a records thing, and
yeah,
you know, to kind of get them into the system,
sure,
were that ever to be necessary.
So I understand, Ray. I mean, I get that, but at least the peacetime consequences of that, even without there even being a draft, is if you're not registered, then you do not. You can't get this federal aid.
Right. That's correct.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's not the case for women. I mean, literally, women do not register for the Selective Service, he said. So my daughter would not have to do so. It could not do so. There's no consequence on a FAFSA form then for them, right?
Right.
All right.
Right.
Any other wisdom you have on this little subject here for us, Ray?
Well, no. I mean, I think I would probably just say I don't think it's anything that people have to worry about immediately. As you pointed out, there's no draft imposed. It would take an act of Congress, and I think that it's still the way to go if you're talking about or thinking about how to finance your kids' futures. The way to go is definitely still financial student aid, because the fact of the matter is that they have other ways of, the government has other ways of finding out who's an eligible potential service member other than just FAFSA. So, I mean, there's, you know, IRS data, et cetera. So
yeah.
I don't think that you're signing your life away, in other words, by signing up for federal student loans, certainly.
I'll let you go, Ray, but just one last thing. When I do quote you a little bit, I say, no, it's my understanding, according to Ray Kaplan, if you are applying for a loan for your son or daughter, or you are applying for a loan for yourself for college, you should always first borrow from federally backed loans, not private loans, right?
Absolutely. That's absolutely true in my opinion. And I've seen a lot of these cases because the federal government and the statute and the law that governs all of these federal student loans is very, very forgiving. So you likely will not have to pay back the full balance. Some people will, but most people won't. And it's, again, just very flexible and forgiving, and you don't have that option with private student loans. So, yeah, again, federal student loans is the way to go for parents and for student borrowers.
Nice to talk to you, Ray. I'll call you in another day when we have more of those kinds of questions. Thanks for your help.
Great. Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
Ray Kaplan of the Kaplan Law Firm. Wayne wanted to say something. Hey, Wayne, it's John. You're on WGN. What can I do for you?
Hi, John. Back when I was drafted in 1971, we had to register on our 19th birthday. Come January of 1971, my birth date was drawn. And when the man said the lotto was my birth date. And they pulled so many birth dates to fill whatever the requirement that was requested by the Pentagon of young men to enter the military. And at the time, I did not have a four-year college deferment. So when I finished my two-year college degree later that summer, I had to report for the draft. And I chose to ignore the draft and join the Marine Corps instead. That's how it was done back then. It was done by your birth date.
Did you then, so you then volunteered for the Marines. What happened when you signed up for the Marines?
I was in the Marine Corps for a few years.
Were you stationed in Vietnam then?
No, I did not wind up in Vietnam.
And what was the negotiation or guarantee from them? If you volunteered to go, look, you don't want to be in the Army or you don't want to fight in Vietnam. I understand that. So then you say,
I never said didn't want to fight in Vietnam. It was just that my MOS was never selected to go to Vietnam.
But you did not want to serve in Vietnam, right? You didn't want to go over there, did you?
No, I would have gladly served.
Yeah. So then you selected but you said you didn't want to get drafted, so you volunteered. So then
I didn't want to go in the Army. I chose the Marine Corps over the Army.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't that you didn't want to serve, but rather you just wanted to pick your branch, and the Marines was more to your liking, huh?
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I appreciate your help on this, Wayne. Thank you for the call. Thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you.
I appreciate you joining us. John, the draft was still active during Vietnam. The draft was ended, but registration is still required. All right, so that's just where we are on some of that today. By the way, I was at the doctor the other day, and not to get into my medical stuff, but I just wanted to share with you an anecdote that's come up on this show before. They did a little biopsy because, like millions of people, I have these little skin cancers that come up all the time. Grew up in Hawaii, lots of exposure. I'm fair-skinned. So every now and then you get a little spot, and then they take a little prick of it, and then they send it off, biopsy it, and it always comes back negative. At least it has for me. So they were doing that yesterday on me, and they gave me a little, I think it's called lidocaine, to numb the area, which is just the most amazing thing that's ever been invented. They just hit you with a couple of shots right around that spot. I think it was. I hardly even felt them. And then they do this biopsy where they actually cut a little away and then actually had to cauterize it to clean it up and stop the bleeding. And I would imagine that if I had felt that, it really would have felt bad. But it was amazing how quickly that numbing agent worked and how completely pain-free it was. You know, like you can feel them tugging on your skin. You feel the pressure of whatever they're doing over there, but it was utterly pain-free. And when they got done, I turned to the nurse that was there, and I said, that's just amazing that you guys just zip, zip, zip did that. I didn't feel a thing. And like, high five, go lidocaine. She says, yeah, it's pretty crazy. She says, but redheads are different because where I just required a couple of little shots of this numbing agent. She said redheads are much more sensitive, and some of them require three times the dose that we just gave you. And then sometimes, mid-procedure, they'll say, I'm feeling that. And what is it about redheads? So I didn't tell her who I was, that I talk on the radio for a living. But that very conversation has come up on this show before, where, do you remember? I forget what exactly it was. But for some reason, we were talking about that, and people who were redheads were calling in, saying, no, I was mid-surgery, abdominal surgery, major procedures, and I could feel it. And it just blows my mind. And I don't know that they know what it is about red-haired people that causes them to be more either sensitive to pain or at least resistant to this lidocaine or these numbing agents. But there, and she looks at me and she says, oh, no, it's a fact. That happens here all the time. People who are red-haired require, I don't know if they automatically then give them more numbing stuff, or if just every now and then though they're on guard and then they hurry up and give it to them because they are more sensitive to pain. Who knew? By the way, 773 texted in and said, military helicopters are flying over the city right now. Is it the soldier that was killed returning home? I don't know exactly what's happening there or if that's how the soldier would return, but that's what somebody was asking about. So far, I don't have an answer. I do to this one. 708 said, what if you're an illegal, say you're DACA or something else, do you have to sign up for selective service? And the answer is yes, legal and otherwise. Everybody, 18 to 25-year-old male, regardless of your status, is required by law to sign up for the selective service. We'll pick up a couple of phone lines, and then we'll conclude. I think I'll have time to tell you the latest on the greatest of all time, the GOAT Championship that starts tonight on TV, the Jeopardy Championship, the three biggest winners of all time, including David Holzhauer. We visited with his brother, Ian, from Naperville a little while ago. Thank you, James Holzhauer. We visited with Ian a little while ago. And there's some news about the person that wins. Remember, this was recorded several weeks ago. I was under the impression it was live. They got them all tonight together in the studio. But no, it's like all the Jeopardy episodes. They recorded it a long time ago, and nobody has said anything. Or have they? Hey, Joe, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. What can I do for you?
John?
Yeah, Joe.
Hi. Yeah, the only thing I wanted to mention, when you mentioned you had a relative that was from Missouri that had, you know, conditions about whether or not he would be fit in well in the military. Yeah. But I just have to tell you, I was in a Boy Scout troop with my son, and these kids, no matter what they can do, the military finds a way for them to succeed. There's going to be cooks. There's going to be maintenance guys. There's going to be everything. They won't all be Navy SEALs and Green Berets. But the only other thing I wanted to tell you was, I was at that Kobo wedding, and I sat down with you, and that Jim Cornelius rendition of the national anthem has got to be the most patriotic thing I've ever heard.
It is at every Blackhawks game. And, a friend of ours here, Joe Brand, got married. Kobo is Allie's last name. I'm not sure if she's hyphenating her last name or not. But so, and Joe's the big sports guy, right? He does play-by-play for the Kane County Cougars. He's one of our voices sometimes before White Sox games. Joe Brand, WGN Radio Sports. As a surprise to him at his wedding at the reception, they say, we have something special. And then, like at a Blackhawks game, they unfurl a big American flag. Jim Corneliuson comes out and sings the national anthem. People lost their minds. That was just such a thrill. And then he salutes and walks off. He made a cameo.
That's what brought back memories.
Wow.
Of the old, old Blackhawk Stadium. The new one is just as good, very patriotic. And the only other thing I wanted to mention to you was, I remembered the kid from LT, the pitcher was Grant Johnson that went to Notre Dame.
But I remembered it was. Oh, yeah, now I remember. You came up and talked to us about this. We were trying to recall Grant Johnson's name. LT pitcher, played for Notre Dame. He was in the Cubs organization for a while, wasn't he?
Yes, till 96, I believe.
Yeah. Hey, I got to go. Joe, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Nice to catch up with you. Yeah, what a great night for the Kobels and the Brands. What a great party they threw. And what a lovely young couple those two are. Very short speeches at the reception, by the way.
Well, that's key.
That is key.
They are a great couple.
Yeah.
Joe had some of the nicest Instagram posts after the wedding, the day of the wedding.
I noticed one of them. Sort of like best hangover ever.
With the picture of his hand against the window and his wedding ring being shown, yeah.
Exactly. And I haven't thought this through enough to relay it as well as I'd like to, and maybe with his permission. Someday I will. But I thought that the speech that Joe Brand gave to the 350 assembled people was about as nice a speech by a groom as I have ever heard. It was very brief. It was very touching. It was smart and sincere. He lost his composure a little bit and then pulled it back together. But it was a tribute to his wife, and it was just pitch perfect. And that is not an easy thing to do. So our best to both of them, and nice job, Joe. Jim, you're on WGN Radio. It's John Williams. What can I do for you, Jim?
Yes, sir. I just want to comment about the draft. July 21st of 1967, I turned 18 and registered for the draft. And September 12th, I was in the service. And then February 12th, I was on my way to Vietnam. And I had two Purple Hearts and a Brad Star, malaria, and Agent Orange. And I think every man that turns 18 should at least join the service.
I don't
agree with the 20, 21, and 22. By the time you're 21, 22, you're married, and you get deferred. That's my comment.
I appreciate the call, and thank you for your service, and congratulations on those awards. Listen, when we were having that conversation, I hated the words coming out of my mouth, because while I was trying to figure it out, you almost did discover a loophole, if you will. You have to register between the ages of 18 and 25, but not at 18. You have until you're 25. And if that's not true, then the chief of staff for Selective Service doesn't know that, because that's what he told us. The appointed chief of staff for Selective Service said 18 to 25 you have to register, but you can wait until the very end, which means you would not be registered for the first 6 years.
And of course, then that means you wouldn't get federal student aid too, and things like that.
There would be consequences for that. So figure that out, particularly since there is no draft. It would require an act of Congress. It would be the third rank of soldiers called up, and we're not at war. So there's a lot of reasons to just go ahead and do it. But the main reason to do it right is because it is a shared obligation that we've asked 18 to 25-year-old men to perform for us. And that's the way it is. It's your patriotic duty.
I can't believe there's been so much silence about women not doing it.
It is not a woman's patriotic duty. It is not a woman's
Even
patriotic
though
duty.
Women are celebrated for their accomplishments in the military.
And are serving side by side in combat. So how that, and to be honest with you, I'm not real anxious about conscripting women. I'm not anxious about conscripting anybody's son or daughter. So if that exception exists, I don't know that it absolutely needs repair. Right? A woman can be in the military if she chooses. I don't like the idea of us grabbing 18-year-old daughters.
I just don't understand how it can be, though, in this case where we're always fighting over everything. I mean, I could see women's groups fighting for the right to register.
As they did to serve voluntarily.
Or men's groups fighting for equality and saying that women should register.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, the more people who go in, the less... I mean, if there are women to do jobs there, too, men are less likely. I don't know. I just can't believe it's not become an issue.
Steve, I have to read this, and then we'll wrap it up. But it says here, offshore sports books started taking bets on the Jeopardy! Greatest of All Time tournament in November, shortly after the game show announced that three legendary champions would face off in the primetime TV event that starts tonight. The odds were up for a month before betting was suddenly halted 3 weeks ago. In the days after the Greatest of All Time tournament was taped, a flurry of bets showed up on one contestant, which ESPN is calling contestant X, to avoid spoiling the outcome. Bookmakers on the receiving end of those bets are convinced that there was a leak and that contestant X, upon whom all of that action was being placed, is in fact the person that wins. They don't say who it is. I guess if you really wanted to know in advance, you could. Coming up on 12 noon on WGN, this is John Williams. I'm back in the saddle, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Let's walk down the hall. Ji Suki is getting ready for our business lunch. What's going on, Ji?
Lots happening today on the show. We're going to have our top tech predictions for this coming year. Also, we're going to have the stock tip of the day, and we're going to be talking about Uber and Lyft and the new taxes and how it's going to affect everybody.
Oh, yeah, right. Yesterday was the first day, right, for the, what is it? It's now $3?
It is, if your ride is originating or ending in the Loop area of downtown Chicago.
Yeah, but I'm sure you'll do this. Look at the map of what the Loop is, because the Loop is drawn bigger than the Loop.
Ah.
The Loop, to me, is where we are south into the financial district and maybe a little north in the shopping district, but the Loop is much bigger than that. Just FYI. So you guys have got that right around the corner, right?
Yes.